You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football. And yes, it's playoff time now. We're talking about the games that are really important, the games of the tournament. And that's not all we're doing today. We are also talking about that national title game at the end. We'll be previewing that too. And we'll start here with those coaching changes and coaching not changes that have happened since the last time we had a show. But, you know, we had New Year's since the last time we had a show. Did anybody do anything special? Gary?
Anything special going on here? That's what you're asking me?
Now, I mean, did you do anything? Like, you go somewhere to watch fireworks?
Really, for the New Year's, I really didn't do anything big. I mean, I can't remember. That's why I'm kind of like dumbfounded, because I'm trying to think. It feels like it was a year ago now. New Year's was such a blank to me. I didn't go anywhere, honestly. I'm not a partier per se at times. Sometimes I just like to chill, and that weekend I was worn out from Christmas. So honestly, everybody, I kind of chilled out. My wife, in fact, fell asleep before the ball dropped. I was sitting there by myself. So yeah, it was kind of a sad day for me, or new. Yeah, there you go. But it was okay. I had a great time.
Lonely New Year's.
Yeah, I felt like one of those people that in a small apartment by himself crying.
Aw. No, I know how that feels. So.
I'm kidding. It was good, even though I was by myself.
That sounds like my Sunday afternoon.
I understand, Randy. We'll talk about your afternoon, because it was, yeah.
So, anything for you, Randy?
No, I played Destiny.
Hey, that's a great way to bring in the new year. I really didn't do anything either. I think I was just – I forgot what I was doing that night, honestly. Kind of like
Gary. I'm telling you.
I think I might have been writing something or whatever. I don't even know.
We sound so blasé here, but right now we sound like we are just some terrible, just boring people. That's not the case. I've done the party thing on New Year's. I've done all that stuff. It was great, but
yeah,
I'm 30-something.
We're all older with kids. Like,
exactly.
You know, at this point, yeah. You're kind of over that.
Like, yeah.
I mean, unless you get the opportunity to like go to New York and be in Times Square, and that's like I've heard that's a one-time thing you do and you don't do it again kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Once I get my DJ equipment upgraded to the point where I need it to be, maybe I'll be doing parties and New Year's, but right now I'm enjoying sitting at home.
DJ Gary, here we go. All right, so I was trying to see if I could find my news theme really quick while y'all were talking, but I couldn't, so we'll just go ahead and transition without the music. Lots of coaches that were changed and were fired, and few coaches that look like, for the love of everything, they were going to go somewhere, and they did not. So let's start with Sean Payton, who for a while there had been talk about the Saints shipping a second-round pick. That's all they needed, and you pulled the trigger, and Sean Payton was yours. According to, you know, NFL and everybody else, the sources saying that pretty much – nobody really was taking the bait on Sean Payton, and so he remains the New Orleans Saints coach for at least another year, which means Drew Brees also will probably remain the quarterback. Is this the right move? Should the Saints have tried harder to get rid of Sean Payton, or was that the best chance they had really to do anything, keep Sean Payton?
Well, I think if they get rid of Sean Payton, they guarantee themselves that they're going to be rebuilding for a few years. So keeping him around definitely allows them to see if maybe they can salvage something. You know, obviously now you've got to expect them to go out and get a quarterback in the draft and start looking towards maybe a easier transition between Drew Brees and the next regime, instead of what it looked like was going to happen this offseason, where they were going to dump everything and just restart from there. So now it looks like it's just going to be a bit more of a softer landing for a while for New Orleans, instead of a crash reboot.
You know, it's funny because we had talked about this midseason. It was kind of a story that was kind of continuing throughout the end of the season as well. But, you know, looking at it, and my opinion was I really felt like Sean Payton was going to stay. Now, you just never know. Things could change between now and, you know, September. You just never know, you know. But I just kind of always felt that Sean Payton has done no wrong. He's coached the team well. They've had some injuries. They've had some player situations that have not helped them, especially losing some guys in free agency. And some of the mix-ups that they've had have not been the way they expected them to be. So saying all that, I mean, it's kind of where I expected it to be, only because of Sean Payton did nothing wrong here. I think if you want to blame anybody, you're going to blame his coordinators. You're going to blame some other people in the organization. This is a solid situation, like Randy said, for them to land softly, for them to try to do a small reboot, not a giant reboot with a brand new coach, brand new, you know, whole staff, and probably a new group of players, because when coaches come in, they try to change even the player situation. So it's interesting. I'm kind of curious how this is all going to work out.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I don't think that Sean Payton has proven that he is certainly a diva through all this, moaning and groaning to the media that, hey, why are you going after me that I'm leaving and that doing this and I don't want you reporting those things? And it's like, who are you to tell the media what they're supposed to report? They're going to do whatever they want. It's kind of what they do anyway. I think it's so silly what Sean Payton has proven himself to be. But if you take away that, also all the spats on the sideline with Rob Ryan and everything, he's still been a terrific coach. He brings that offense. He's certainly the guy that Drew Brees loves and trusts. You know he's going to play hard for him. And, you know, we'll have to see what they do with the defense, if that gets any better for next year. But they've been so bad these past two seasons that, you know, we'll have to see. But another team that their defense has been pretty bad, and probably the reason why he got fired, it was a complete surprise. This is the one that we thought, even though the team kind of, you know, blanked out to end the season and they were in the running for playoffs at one point, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Glazers have fired Lovie Smith. He is no longer the coach of the Tampa Bay Bucs, and this is nothing new for the Glazers. They were the ones that fired John Gruden after they went to England. Of course, they're also the owners of Manchester United. So, you know, they have other things going on. Manchester United has enough of their own problems with their coach over there. And they're talking about different guys that could be their coach, too. So I think they might heard all the problems that are going over there and said, hey, let's just fire this one. You know, Randy was telling me off the air, obviously, that he thinks Tampa Bay is a joke. Do you agree with that sentiment, Gary?
Well, as in making decisions in the front office like that, yes. That is a complete joke. Losing a guy like Lovie Smith.
I mean, will say this, Gary. I will say this. Lovie Smith's supposed to be a defensive guy. Their defense has been bad.
Okay, how many years has he been there?
He's been there 2 years, but this is supposed to be a defensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times did Jameis Winston have to bail them out this year? I mean,
yeah. I get that, and yes, I understand, but I think there is a window, and as in players, I'm a firm believer in coaches as well. A 2 to 3 year window is what you're going to get to see the actual product that's going to be put on the field. And yeah, their defense was bad still, but you saw some players come out of what Levy Smith was doing that shows that they got a future. So, I mean, I don't know. In my personal opinion, 3 to 4 years, if it's still nothing, then you know this coach is gone. To me, this is still a knee-jerk reaction, 2 years or not. I hate it because Levy Smith is a smart guy, and I think he could do a lot of things. They just didn't give him the ample time he needed. Look where it was when he got there. This was not a playoff team when Levy Smith showed up in town. If it was, then we'll talk about defense.
I mean, you're right about that, Gary. They certainly weren't a playoff team. I mean, they made the right decision, obviously, with Jameis Winston. And, you know, Randy, to your point that you made, a lot of the players were on Twitter like, what the hell's going on here? Like, well, this is insane.
It basically shows that it came out of complete nowhere because there was an assistant coach that came out and said, we just had a meeting with Levy Smith, you know, looking for towards the off season. So this definitely came out of nowhere. And just to the point where Levy Smith is a defensive guy and the look of Winston bailed him out. I mean, you look at the stats, Tampa Bay was a top 10 defense as far as yards per game against. It was just they gave up points because, you know, their field position's not going to be the best because the rookie quarterback's going to make mistakes. This was supposed to be them building up to something, you know, a long-term future, and obviously they didn't see it that way. This was an improvement just because they kind of fell off record-wise. What's the difference between losing 5 of your last 6 if you're Tampa Bay or getting to 8-8 and still making the playoffs? This is not a playoff team. It was never going to be a playoff team. They definitely overachieved with a few victories to make
right,
it look
you
like
look
they
at an ownership. You got to look at an ownership, though, that might say, well, we believe that we should have been.
Well, that's wonderful, but now name one person that you can bring in that's going to take that exact same crew and make it better. I mean, it's
look at the
teams that are favored to be, you know, in the Super Bowl this year. I mean, other than Denver that has had a recent change, most of the rest have a solid core in the coaching ranks that have been there for years. It's consistency. It's working as a group and getting the infrastructure built before you can start thinking of a championship. I mean, you're looking at the New England and Seattle's of the world, or Green Bay, or Arizona, and where the coaching staffs have been there for years. Carolina, the coaching staff has been there for years, and they're finally really making it stand out. It's not like college where, you know, you're sifting through players every 4 years, so you expect a coach to come in there and start changing things right away. In the NFL, it's going to take a few years to get your system in place, get people that go with your system in place. I mean, we talked about it with Chip Kelly where, I mean, he was super specific about the players he needed in place and at times treated them as objects instead of humans, and that's why people hate Chip Kelly. But with Levy Smith, it's going to take him time. Again, he took a team that it was complete garbage and made them a top 10 defense. Obviously there has to be something behind the scenes, an argument that happened, a complete disagreement for it to happen, because the ownership cannot look at it and go, well, if we had anybody but Levy Smith, we'd be 11-5 and in the playoffs right now.
It just makes me question their football intelligence, when it comes, at least American football. They may know a ton about English Premier League. They may know a lot about
I don't know
all
what
that.
They know much about English Premier League either.
But yeah, I could see, Sean, you would know that more than I would. But to me, this is just a knee-jerk reaction of we weren't successful, and maybe Levy Smith stood up for himself. Maybe he took up for his players. Maybe he took up for his rest of his staff. Maybe they said, fire this guy, fire this guy. We don't know this behind-the-scenes, you know, conversation. It's kind of like what Randy's alluding to. So maybe it was that. I don't know. I just think this is a bad decision, and they're going to hurt for it. I feel that way because, like Randy just pointed out, who are you going to bring in that's really going to solve this? Can't think of one person right now.
You know, there are a few guys that are going to be on that list of people you can pick up. You know, we'll talk about one in a second, but I think we should note too that Lovie Smith brought in some guys that didn't work out in the system. There's been talk that the defense, apparently a lot of the players didn't like it because they considered that cover two, Tampa two, very outdated, and that Lovie Smith never really kind of updated it for kind of today's NFL. I mean, this is so weird because you have player outcry that they don't know what's going on, but then you've got players talking about what Lovie Smith's supposed to be good at and that he's supposed to know the personnel that he's bringing over guys from Chicago where he was the previous coach, and they didn't work out. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you can put it a lot on the Glazers, but I think they're also looking at that too, that he brought in guys and they didn't work, and then what if he brings in guys again that don't work, you know? So, I mean, because if anything, the Saints have proven it's really hard to win when you're trying to get in a shootout every time. Or the mm-hmm. Jaguars this year proved the same thing. It's really hard, even if you can't play perfect every game. There's games where, you know, yes, they did, you know, like Randy said, they are still up there in yards against and whatever, but it's not the only stat that matters. You can look at it all you want, but there's other factors. It's obviously, but you can certainly say on the other end, the offensive part of the game was figured out, and that's why apparently the leading candidate is the offensive coordinator. So, you know, we'll have to see if he does get picked. They're basically saying that in a week we're going to see Dirk Koetter be the coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So,
well, how about this? It would not surprise me with these idiots in Tampa Bay that in 2 weeks they announced that they hired Rob Ryan to be the defensive coordinator.
Oh, it would not surprise me either, honestly.
Oh, man. Oh.
Another coach that it looked like for everything in the world he was going to be gone, especially because him and the GM had problems, him and the ownership had problems. They had problems last year when the team was actually doing pretty well. This year, no Andrew Luck for a lot of games. You have to play Matt Hasselbeck as your quarterback, Charlie Whitehurst as your quarterback. The last game, freaking Josh Freeman was his quarterback. And even then, they had to bring in Ryan Lindley too because Josh Freeman was doing pretty bad. So about five different quarterbacks in your year. They're thinking about letting Chuck Pagano go. Chuck Pagano winds up staying. So does Ryan Grigson. He stays as well. Does this guy, this surprise you at all? I mean, obviously you'd say he didn't deserve to be fired, but surprise?
This is the polar opposite situation from Tampa Bay. I mean, the, you know, the distrust and, you know, obviously, like you said, they're not fans of each other, the ownership and Pagano. But they see it as, listen, Pagano, there's no reason to fire Pagano. They finished 8-8 under complete turmoil and injuries, and they lost their star player, and he was still able to keep them in the running for the division that entire season, I mean, under 40-year-old Matt Hasselbeck. So they put away their personal differences and said, listen, we can make this work next year. The AFC is going to be completely wide open. There's no dominant teams in the AFC anymore. There are several really good teams, but there's nobody where you go, well, it's their conference, and, you know, we just hang out in it. So they feel like next year, if Andrew Luck can get back to 100%, that they could win the AFC. So they put aside everything and said, all right, we're working as a team and we're going to make this work.
What do you think, Gary?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I just think they look at this past season as kind of a loss. I think it's kind of the same way if you look at teams like the Dallas Cowboys. Without your starting quarterback, your team is not going to be good. It's just not. You can have guys like Hasselbeck who can do a standard job, who can come in and win you a couple games. Maybe if you're lucky, you can come in and win 4, 5, 6 games. But most times, that's not exactly the way it's going to work out. And, you know, Andrew Luck being gone is a big factor in this. I think that's also why they kind of looked at some other scenarios where this coach has been successful in the system that he runs. He's done a lot of good things to kind of build them. He's got some great free agents. You saw him bring in Gore they used him well, and they also had some defensive players that, you know, are okay, but their defense is still bad. That's a big problem. So needless to say, I think that they've had to see something that they were intrigued by and that they felt comfortable with to make that kind of commitment. I know the GM is not happy. I know the GM himself is not thrilled at all, but that's something they're going to have to work through.
Yeah, and who knows? They are going to have to work on it. I mean, they have this whole offseason to work on it. They're going to have to get it figured out by the draft, obviously, because you got to go in there all guns blazing about, you know, having set who's going to be on your board, all those kinds of things, and we'll talk about that as the we get into the offseason. But we have a few other coaching decisions to discuss. As well, the Colts did name Rob Chudzinski, their offensive coordinator, who was with them after they fired the original guy, whose name escapes me right now, who used to be the coach, one of the coaches for Andrew Luck at Stanford. And they named their defensive coach, defensive coordinator right now as well. So at least they've got personnel that they've already been named and everything. So things seem to be smoothing out on that end. But we'll talk about Mike Pettine here, who was fired about 10 minutes after that game ended against the Steelers. I mean, obviously, that defense wasn't stopping anybody. I think UI and, you know, all of us could have ran through the Browns defense at one point. But, you know, you had the turmoil there with Manziel. You had, I guess his name, McCown get hurt, which forced their hand on Manziel. Then Manziel decided to go do a bunch of crap, and now they might be done with him, period. And he gets fired. Obviously, Cleveland continuing to make stupid decisions. Well, you can make stupid decisions. They brought somebody from the New York Mets, who used to be part of the Moneyball team with Billy Bean, to be part of their front office. He knows nothing about football. Does that make any sense to you guys? Like, why are you bringing non-football guys?
But actually, I think it may, out of everything they've done, this it makes the most sense.
Why?
Because it's the most forward-thinking the Browns have ever been. They're going, listen, we suck at doing this, so we're going to bring in a completely different mindset and see what they can do. They're not allowing him to make all of these moves. He is just there to advise them. And like the NFL has definitely been the slowest to kind of fall into the numbers game and sabermetrics that
and
baseball
I think
just
why
loves.
Not? Because it doesn't work with football.
But how do you know? It hasn't been proven yet.
You can't. I don't think you can put numbers on a player like that in football because it's so team oriented. It's not like baseball where you can put numbers on a pitcher, put numbers on this one hitter or whatever. It's just, it doesn't matter about where you have guys in your lineup and whatever. It's about the entire team. You know,
but if you can find that Wes Welker type that is not going to get paid anywhere near a Wes Welker, and you can put him in a slot, you can find those offensive linemen that work really well as far as maybe rushing attack, or you find, like, if your quarterback doesn't have the strongest arm, then you can go through with the numbers and find offensive linemen who are really good, you know, at rush blocking, but, you know, might let some stuff through after a while. And you can, there's so many ridiculous numbers now that the NFL can exploit. I'm not saying it's going to work perfectly. It never did, even in baseball, because it can't all be just about the numbers. And I don't think that's what Cleveland's trying to do, but it just gives them a different perspective. It gives them something else to look at, something possibly to find that, you know, can change their mentality, because their mentality right now sucks. I mean, they're in the same boat as Tampa Bay, where they're like, oh, we suck for 2 years. We completely made complete turmoil with this quarterback situation, so let's fire the coach because we don't know what else to do. So am I saying all of a sudden the Browns are going to be a top-notch Super Bowl contender over the next 5 years? Absolutely not. But at least it's forward-thinking and it's something different.
Where do you go on that line, Gary?
You know, I could definitely see where a change of mindset is what you need here. And in some scenarios it works, in other scenarios it doesn't. I think they're taking a chance here, and that's possibly a good thing. I mean, it's tough for me because I'm kind of like you, Sean. I kind of look at it as a guy that how much does he know? What can he really provide? You know, he's not been in this for a long time. But
my problem is when you have a coach and he comes in, how do you know what questions to ask when you're interviewing? When mm-hmm. you're interviewing that coach, how the hell do you know how to ask the guy, okay, what are you going to do for this team? You know, what person? You know, the only questions you're asking is what personnel are you bringing in? Have you talked to those guys? What's doing? Okay, and then you go through the list of have they been here before, all that. But do you really know, like, the football minutiae that you're going to need to ask them
mm-hmm.
of how this works? And that's my issue. Like,
yeah,
I mean, most owners and general managers don't even know that anyway. But then you're bringing a guy that has nothing to do with football, and he's going to be sitting in there, and I just don't know.
Well, that's my thing. And I'm in total agreement with that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm kind of like leaning towards where you're coming from and those thought processes. And now, on the other hand, this guy may, like Randy said, may have something different to bring. Maybe he has some ideologies that he shared with them and said, this is what I think. I think I can be a provider and I can give you guys opportunities where other teams aren't thinking this way. Other teams aren't evaluating coaches and staff and things the way I, you know, could give you guys some heads up on. So, I don't know. It's weird to me, but I'm just going to have to sit back and see. I've never actually really seen this. I'm thinking back in history of guys in this position, and I can't think of any.
Yeah.
Like I said, if they would have came out and like announced him as the general manager or like the head coach or something ridiculous like that, then yeah, I'm right there with you. But he's an advisor, you know. Right. He's just there to give another suggestion. Are they going to sit there and do everything he says? Of course not. Mm-hmm. But he's an advisor, and it worked for Oakland for many years. Yes, that is baseball. This is football, completely different. But baseball went through the same thing where they looked at a mathematician and went, well, what the fuck does he know? He never played football. He's not going to be able to fix this team. And they fixed Oakland. Oakland was a contender.
Told me so I could hit the beep button or something.
Wow. don't be attacking my numbers now. I'm a numbers guy over here.
He is.
No, I'm talking about the F word you just blasted on the air. Like,
making me grumpy over here. And you're attacking a numbers guy.
Okay.
Going, this is my football. There's no numbers in it. We play fantasy football. NFL is all numbers.
You fantasy football is not. You're not looking at when you're.
Well,
when
no,
you're
and that's not the numbers he's looking at. He's looking at something completely different. That was a joke. But listen, it's baseball went through the same process where they went. Listen, don't bring numbers into my game. We know what's up. You know nothing. And he made Oakland relevant, not just him, but, you know, he helped that process. Who knows? He could make Cleveland relevant this way.
Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, we'll have to see, obviously. But, I mean, that's another ownership group that we already talked about that has issues on its own, that they just do not apparently believe in stability. And we'll talk about a team that has had a lot of stability. With one Tom Coughlin, who pretty much, it seems like they made him step down, or they were going to fire him, because during the press conference, when Tom Coughlin goes to get off the podium, he doesn't even shake Mr. Mara's hand. He walks right by him and gives him the cold shoulder. And to tell you, I think, a lot by doing that. You've had all this history with this ownership group, with this GM, and you basically, you know, stiff him. So, and Tom Coughlin went out and said that he is still wanting to be a coach. This he is not retiring. But in the end, I think we've talked about this a bunch already, but in the end, the Giants, they make the right call?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Tom Coughlin gave himself extra rope at those two Super Bowl championships. I mean, he was there for an 11-12 season, so it's not like this is some drastic decision, but the fact is he made the playoffs once in the last 7 years. This is now time to do something different. It just it's not working the way it used to, and it's time for a change. It's not like he's been here for 2 years and they missed the playoffs, so cut him. There is now a long track record of no success.
Yeah, and also I think when the ownership and the GM and everybody was kind of looking at the situation, I think that they were considering Tom Coughlin is, I think, 69 years old. He's just getting a little older. And I think really honestly it wasn't just because maybe the drought has happened. I don't think that was just the primary reason. I think it's definitely a part of it. It's a portion that is significant, but I think also the thought process of we need to get some new blood in here. We need to get this thing going with some new ideologies. And not only that, maybe get a spark going. Find somebody that can come in here and just get things going back in the right direction. Right now, we're just stagnant. We're right there, always right there in the middle. We're not going anywhere. Let's get someone who can put us over the hump, maybe. I think that was a big part of it, too. You know, I think organizations love fresh blood because there's a lot more hope with fresh blood. We'll see. I'm really kind of curious who gets this job because that's going to be big shoes to fill. Tom Coughlin did an excellent job for the most part with his time there.
Would you say that they're the best job available?
I think
they have the most talent, I think, out of anybody in them, and an ownership that showed that, you know, they will stick with you for an extra period of time. So yeah, I think it's the best job available.
Yeah, I'll play a devil's advocate. You know, there's a job that I look at, and I think if you get the right guy going to this place and you find a way to motivate players, I think once Miami makes their decision, that's the place I'd want to go. I think once they make their final decisions on everything they're doing, because that's a place with definitely a big talent, you just got to get them motivated. But you're right. Right now, as we sit here right now, yeah, the Giants job is probably the job you want to have.
Well, so we have one job we haven't talked about, and that is the San Francisco 49ers, who fired Jim Tom Sula, who I think personally, for all the things that he had going against them at the beginning of the season with all the retirements and all that stuff, and then you have to make a quarterback change in the middle of the season. Blaine Gabbert, obviously, you know, not God's gift to quarterbacking or anything, but he did okay, considering the circumstances also, and they fire him. And I don't know. I thought it was a little harsh for Mr. Tom Sula. I know he's not maybe the best option you could possibly get, but I don't think that, you know, the players were losing faith in the guy or that he's a bad coach or anything. But that leaves the door open for other coaches. Apparently Chip Kelly was interested. Of course, that would mean Colin Kaepernick would probably go back to being the quarterback. Sean Payton was supposedly interested, but of course he's not going there. And apparently Stanford's coach from college, David Shaw, is apparently interested as well. Do you think this is the right move for San Francisco? And do you see a Chip Kelly fitting there? Or maybe a Tom Coughlin going there? Let's put the Tom Coughlin thing separate. What is there a spot? Does Tom Coughlin work on one of these teams? And what do you think about the San Francisco the job there?
I'll just do the Tom Coughlin real quick and then let Gary go. My prediction for Tom Coughlin is he will be the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles next year.
Wow, going to the next NFC team, NFC East team.
Yep.
You know, Randy took an intelligent guess, and I'm going to take a hope and a wish guess, and I'm going to say that Tom Coughlin needs to put his efforts into a city that needs desperately to win. I would love to see Tom Coughlin go to the Cleveland Browns and turn it around.
That's make exactly things happen. What I was going to say. Get rid of Manziel and let Coughlin do what you got to do let him be there for the draft, let him do all that. I mean, maybe obviously with his age, you don't know how long he's really going to be there, but he can at least reformat your team and get them going in a positive direction.
Yeah.
So
You know, you talked about the 49ers job, and that's another place I think Tom Coughlin could be of huge assistance. I think, though, with Chip Kelly would work wonders there because of the fact that, you know, he can, you know, he's definitely going to have a great draft pick. He's definitely going to have a lot of leeway, I think, out there, especially already having a quarterback in place that kind of plays the way he likes to play, you know, with his quarterbacks. So I see a lot of promise when it comes to that job, when it comes to Chip Kelly. A lot of these other cities, I'm not so hopeful. That, to me, that's the dream position for Chip Kelly right now. And if he gets it, he gets it. But I don't know. The 49ers are a team that I think that they've got a lot of work to do. But on the other hand, I mean, I think that they're a team kind of like the Philadelphia Eagles, where if you get the right person in there, they add a few pieces, and you could be in a very good spot.
Well, do you have a thought on the 49ers there, Randy?
Says, I mean, obviously I think they feel like they can go out and get somebody that will fit them better. Obviously, they didn't give him, like, enough support, and this year has been completely terrible for him, so I'm definitely feel bad. But I mean, because there's nothing else you could do, they just must feel like they can get a more veteran coach that can help rebuild it. I just don't see him being able to rebuild a franchise. He was able to make more out of the season than I thought they would. But as far as rebuilding it and making them the 49ers again, Tom Zula just does not seem like the guy that can do that.
So. It sounds terrible, Randy, but when they hired him, when they made that decision, and I heard who the head coach of the 49ers was, when they were signing the contract, I kept looking for the pink slip next to it with a certain date, you know, like when you postmark a check. You know, I thought the postmark for the pink slip would be a year. So, I mean, I did not see him working out, and it didn't happen. I mean, I guess I was waiting to be proved wrong. I just had no confidence in him. So, that's just the way I felt about him.
No, and I think a lot of people did. I don't think that was just you, Gary. I think just almost everybody looked at that hire and go, okay, they just hired some dude. Mm-hmm. Like, they just hired him from within because they didn't have enough time, or they didn't want to go through a coaching change, or just because he was the assistant. They thought the players did, you know, rally around him, and they still played for him and everything. It's not like I said, they didn't give up on him, but it is what it is for San Francisco. But I think on Monday we can talk more about maybe, you know, who might be a better fit for in these positions, mm-hmm. and whatever. Let's go on and talk about these NFL Wild Card Weekend games that are happening, two on Saturday, two on Sunday. The first one, around 4 o'clock, I don't know. Actually, yeah, it is I think this is the first time in a long time they didn't split the two conferences on the two different days. They decided to have one conference on Saturday, one conference on Sunday. So the first game on the ballot is the Kansas City Chiefs visiting the Energy Stadium in Houston, Texas, to play the Houston Texans. Yeah, I'm confusing myself. Brian Hoyer gets a shot again. This time he won't have Ryan Mallett to come in and take his shoes and take his spot. And we have, again, the Chiefs visiting. And a game that was played in week one. So I don't think you can take a lot from that game, because the Texas defense from about Halloween on has been ridiculous. In fact, they have been leading the league in every category since Halloween. So, you know, this is, and you know, the Chiefs defense is getting a lot of people back, Justin Houston, Tom Wally, all them. So certainly seems like it's going to be a defensive battle, right? Maybe not a game that we see a lot of points.
Yeah, definitely not a sexy matchup between these two. Could be one of those first 1-20 wins. It's definitely going to be, and I mean, I'm just throwing out generic, punchlines here, basically, but it could be whoever has the least amount of turnovers in the game. It's basically, that's what these two teams are. They're not sexy teams at all. They very much rely on their defense and making sure their offense doesn't screw it up. And I think Kansas City has definitely shown that they do that better. I mean, I think Houston does have the better defense out of the two, but Kansas City knows how to not screw it up on the offensive side. So, yeah, again, a very low-scoring game. I could see Houston winning at home here, but I think Kansas City overall is the better team.
So, Gary, I mean, we, you know, to Randy's point, I think Alex Smith has about 9 touchdowns and no interceptions in the playoffs when he's been around. You know, Brian Hoyer, on the other hand, not experienced with that. But, you know, we have seen him be able to throw it to DeAndre Hopkins. And on the other side, you know, Jeremy Maclin only has 1 drop out of all the catches that he's had, which is amazing for him, honestly. And I think, to me, the key thing is for the Chiefs that is different from the Texans. You know, both guys have a receiver they can rely on. The Texans seem to have found a tight end they can rely on, just like Travis Kelce, but they don't have a reliable running game, whereas, you know, they have Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West that have been doing really well for the Chiefs. Is that an area that you think is going to be exploited by the Chiefs, or you think the Texas defense will shut that down?
You know, I think, you know, when you're talking about both these defenses, they are similar in some ways. And I think stopping the run will be fairly effective. I think that both these defenses can do that. So I'm not so focused on the running game as much. I do want to say that I do think Kansas City has the upper hand here. Like you said, Sean, Spencer Ware, Sakondrick West, both these guys.
And don't forget Alex Smith, man.
Yeah.
He's been running it up himself. So.
Yeah, and you know, I think they have the upper hand with it. Their two running backs compared to Grimes, compared to Blue, any of those guys don't really make me excited. It's not a sexy thing there. But what is the difference in this game is what you also pointed out, Sean, the quarterbacks. That's what I'm looking at here. I am a Hoyer fan. I thought Hoyer did a great job on a measly Cleveland Browns team. Came to the Texans, had some issues, did okay at the beginning, but you know, they wanted Mallett to be their quarterback. He came to a team that wanted new blood at quarterback, and guess what? It kind of changed things around. It didn't end up the perfect thing, perfect way he wanted it to work out. I think Hoyer will do okay, but I think Alex Smith has the upper hand here. He's been playing all year. He's done a great job. I got to give it to the Kansas City Chiefs here because I feel like that they're just a little bit more talented.
Man, this is a hard one for me. I think I might be by myself on this, but I have a sneaky feeling. I think Houston's defense can play well enough. I think, obviously, you know, they're going to try to take away DeAndre Hopkins, but I think what I've seen from Hoyer is that he'll throw it around a bit. He'll just throw it to whoever's around, which is not to say that Alex Smith won't do the same thing, because he does. You can obviously, Alex Smith will run, which is something Brian Hoyer won't do, but I just have this feeling. I think I'm going to go with Houston on my end. All right, I'm guessing you guys, with what you said, you're both taking the Chiefs.
Yes, give me Kansas City.
Yeah, Kansas City.
All right, we'll also go ahead and do our – I didn't tell the guys we're doing this, but I think we got to be – I think going ahead and doing an overall prediction, and then we will obviously break things down week by week still. But I think it's always fun to go ahead and do an overall prediction before the whole thing starts, see who, you know, Navy shows up being smart in the end. But let's move on to the other AFC matchup, a game that we just saw a couple weeks ago. The Pittsburgh Steelers traveling the Cincinnati Bengals, A.J. McCarron against Ben Roethlisberger, and that ridiculous offense. Have they made a decision on D'Angelo Williams yet? They figured out it was only a sprained ankle in the end. And the Bengals, of course, A.J. McCarron, no Andy Dalton still. Don't know if he's going to be back, depending on whether they move on or not. Still got that defense for the Bengals. Still have A.J. Green. Still have the two running backs. Is it similar to the first matchup, or do you think something changes here?
Gary, go ahead. I refuse to talk about this matchup. Still upset.
Oh, I know. I am so sorry for that. But, yeah, you know, I look at this matchup, and you know, it really makes me kind of sad for the Cincinnati Bengals, because if Andy Dalton plays this game, I think he has a lot more confidence in what the Bengals bring. I am not talking bad about A.J. McCarron, because McCarron has done a fine job at what he's done. He's not perfect, but, hey, he's a young quarterback. I just in this matchup, though, I think Cincinnati's going to have some of the same troubles as possibly as we've seen in years past now because of the situation at quarterback. And I don't look at the Pittsburgh Steelers as a dominant team. I think they've done a lot of great things, don't get me wrong, but they are not dominating really, really good teams. They're playing pretty well, though, against some awful teams. I do want to say this. I'm going to go ahead and go on a limb here and say I believe this will be an upset. I really feel like Cincinnati Bengals fans are going to be sad. I just think that this team in Pittsburgh, they're going to come in here hot, and I think they're going to come in here and win this game.
This is another one that's difficult for me because I feel like the Bengals are going to fight. This is not going to be a Steelers blowout, especially with it being in Cincinnati. And Andrew McCarron has done just fine. I mean, he's not Andy Dalton, but I'm not saying he's like, you know, he's not a runt either. I mean, he's not. I think he's proven that he can handle the offense just fine. And you still got that dangerous defense out there, one that I would pick over the Steelers with a secondary that's had issues. So, you know, this is a rough one for me. It's so hard to go in twice and win in somebody's building. I think I might go ahead and go with the not sexy pick twice. I think I'm going to go with the Bengals here. Randy, are you at least going to make a prediction?
I don't talk about it.
Come on.
Send me the Jets and the stupid thing 10 yards away from the playoffs. No. I've never stared at a TV screen for longer without blinking at the end of it. But that's neither here nor there. So this is the most difficult matchup, I think, out of the four this weekend for me to predict, and it's because of the injuries. We still don't know. Is Andy Dalton going to play, or is it A.J. McCarron? To me, I don't think that's even that much of a difference. I think McCarron has shown that he, especially as a backup, can do the job. The bigger one for me is D'Angelo Williams, who has missed back-to-back practices. Looks like Pittsburgh is leaning more towards Toussaint. Is that how do you say that guy's name?
Toussaint.
Yeah.
Toussaint and Jordan Todman, two guys you've never heard of until last week. How much will that affect? Obviously, the switch from Le'Veon Bell to D'Angelo Williams has been a smooth win. Williams has had a successful year, but losing him makes you very one-dimensional, in my opinion, and I think that's where Cincinnati can really take advantage. So I think I'm going to go with Sean here. If D'Angelo Williams does not play, I think Cincinnati wins it finally at home and gets that off the back. I like the fact that they've lost four straight first-round matchups in four straight years. They haven't won one since, 1990? So they've lost six in a row, but it's four straight years. But those were all against non-divisional opponents. Maybe you put in a division opponent, and it makes it feel less like a playoff game and more like a rivalry game, and they can get the chip off their shoulder and monkey off their back. That's the one I was looking for. Yeah, give me Cincinnati.
Yeah, and you know, the reason I'm picking the Steelers, too, is simply because of the passing game. They have the best receivers right now. These receivers are doing just amazing for Big Ben. The running game may cause a problem, but I can't get past the passing game. I don't care how good Cincinnati's defense appears. I think it's going to be very close, though. I'm going Pittsburgh. I'll even throw out a number. I'll say 24-23 Pittsburgh.
All right, that's as close as you can get it, really. All right, so we got two Bengals and one Steelers. We got two Chiefs and one Texans in the AFC. We're moving on to the NFC, where the first game of the day will be the Vikings at home against the Seattle Seahawks, where the Seahawks absolutely spanked the Vikings about 6 weeks ago now. Is this the same game again?
I think it's the same game, but a lot colder. The fact that they're saying
I think the cold is going to affect the Seahawks a lot. But you know.
Yeah, well, it looks like they're going to get Marshawn Lynch back, which is definitely going to help the running game. Listen, as much as I hate Seattle Seahawks fans in my area and how much I would love to see Seattle lose this game just so they would shut up for a few months, I just think they're on too much of a roll. I really feel if they would have went to Washington, it would be a different story, and we will get to that when we get to the next game. But with here, I think they just match up really well against Minnesota. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is not going to go out there and beat you, and that lets them focus in on Adrian Peterson, and they have the talent on that defense to slow Adrian Peterson down. And then you have Russell Wilson, who has had one of the best second half performances of any quarterback in history. I mean, his numbers in the second half of this year are just outstanding. He has figured out how to throw it in the pocket. Add in Marshawn Lynch coming back. It's tough not to see Seattle roll in this game.
You know, and when I thought about this game, this is the matchup I wanted, and simply because I wanted it. Really, let's be honest, I didn't want to see a Vikings-Packers game for a second week in a row. That was not interesting at all to me, but this game is probably going to be even less interesting just because I feel like, let's just be honest, I think that Seattle is a better team overall than the Vikings. The Vikings have done a great job to get here at this point, but Bridgewater, like Randy pointed out, is not going to be able to beat that defense. If he does, he deserves an award. I just have not seen it this year. AP, okay, sure, rushing champ this year. But we're talking about Seattle defense that stops the run probably better than most other teams in this league. So I just don't see any help from the offense for the Vikings, and I definitely don't think the defense can handle what Russell Wilson has done to teams. So, yeah, I definitely agree with Randy.
This is hard, I think, because the Vikings like to play, you know, playing in that cold weather is something that's not easy to do. Seattle's not really used to that so much. Maybe the rain, but not the snow like that. And, you know, the icy weather that you're going to have. I mean, I think, obviously, they're going to key in again on stopping Peterson, but Teddy Bridgewater has, I think, improved a lot as a passer. In the past three or four games, he's done a lot better. I mean, obviously, you still got suspect receivers there. But, you know, Stephon Diggs is a guy. You're obviously going to have Sherman on him, and that's going to be an issue, too. Is that defense, who, I should point this out, Linval Joseph, Harrison Smith, and Barr were not around when they played the first time, and those are your three key guys in each one of your levels defensively. That's your spine. You don't have those guys. That's huge defensively. And I think for that reason, I'm still going to pick the Seahawks. But it's going to be a lot closer. You're not seeing a blowout in this game, because they're going to come for vengeance, knowing what happened last time. They're at home. I almost think the Vikings could possibly do it, but I don't want to pick the upset three times. I'm going to say the Seahawks here.
I now have one question for you, Sean. Last year, the Minnesota Vikings, where did they play all their home games?
It wasn't at the same place, was it?
They were at the College of Minnesota. Because
they were still College of Minnesota?
Yeah, they were going through all of that mess.
Okay. See, I'm trying to remember, and I'm hoping you guys can remind me, how cold were the games last year? Because I'm just not sold that these Vikings are an ice team. That they play
it's,
in ice.
It's not going to be. I mean, they played in 13 degree weather last week. I mean, it's not like, or I mean, they played in, you know, ice, bad weather last week against the Packers. Mm-hmm. They played in that. I mean, it was against the Giants, but it was 13 degrees. You know.
Yeah, it's cold, there. But it's not bad conditions. It's just cold weather, right?
But like, it's conducive to. That's, you know, Peterson has fumbled the ball this year. That's an issue he's had, but. It's conducive to you running the ball, and that's going to be a thing. Which defense is going to be able to – is it? Are you going to be able to stop Peterson? Are you going to stop Marshawn Lynch? Would I would definitely key on the Seahawks are going to be able to stop Peterson more than the Vikings are going to stop Marshawn Lynch. But again, you know, this is a guy that hasn't played in a lot of weeks. I mean, is he going to have a little bit of rust on him? I mean, there's a lot of factors here. But I think I don't know that I can go with this upset. I got to pick the Seahawks.
Yeah, and I agree. And you make a great point, Sean, and I want to point that out. Now I'm kind of swaying a little bit on the weather thing because the ball will be a lot harder because of that cold weather. So, I mean, you could definitely see some turnovers in this game because of that.
I agree with you, but when I have a guy – I mean, both these guys are going to be rolling out. Both these are going to be running. But when what I look at is still – if I'm going to pick a guy, Russell Wilson is that guy that's going to – he doesn't – I mean, he's made a lot more turnovers this year than he has in the past. Obviously, that also is because that offensive line has not been blocking for him that well when you have guys in your face. But that's the thing that Bridgewater's had to deal with too. And Russell Wilson deals with it a lot better than Bridgewater does. And that's what I look at as the final nail that shows me you got to pick the Seahawks because, you know, at the end of the day, the playoffs can sometimes come down to your quarterback and your defense. And Seahawks have both of those.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody going with the Seahawks here, I guess?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So we get to a game here that's in Landover, Maryland, where the Redskins have been fantastic this year. And a Packers team that is coming in on, you know, they won that game, but the Vikings made it a close one. Or they lost that game, sorry. They lost that game. The Packers tried to make it a close one because it's just some part of me feels like I think everybody knew you wanted to play Washington and not have to play the Seahawks again. But there's been nothing about the Packers just recently since they've gone on to that losing streak and then the way that they played the rest of the season that has made me feel like you really need to go with them in this game because I'm looking at it like this. The only thing that makes me sort of sway the Packers' way is that the Redskins' defense is banged up. They don't have the guys that are going to be a bother for Randall Cobb and Richard Rodgers and whatever that some of these other defenses would. You know, the Vikings are a division team. The Seahawks, obviously, those would have been the two teams that they would have played aside from the Redskins. I think if there was a team you wanted to play where your offense could do okay, it's this team. Now, on the other side, you have issues defensively at times in the passing game where Washington has been ridiculous with DeSean Jackson, with Jordan Reed, who's evolved into a total game changer, and you got Pierre Garçon. And if I'm looking at receivers, I want Washington's right now. I don't want Green Bay's. And you've got a suspect run. You got two suspect run games. So are you seeing maybe a shootout here between Washington and Green Bay?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I was really wishing Seattle would have ended up going to Washington because, like you said, Washington is extremely dangerous at home. Kirk Cousins is starting to figure things out. I mean, not to the point where, what was it, the Washington Post came out with who would you rather have for the next 5 years, Kirk Cousins or Aaron Rodgers debate. I don't think that's a debate. I think you'd take Aaron Rodgers all day long. But he has definitely improved and shown that he can lead this team. So I really wanted to see Seattle go to Washington and maybe, you know, relive what happened against New Orleans when New Orleans was the hot team going to this crappy division winners in Seattle. And I'll have Seattle go to the crappy division winners in Washington and just see what would happen. But I do see this to be a complete shootout. Exactly like you said, both defenses are definitely struggling. I do not like what I have been seeing out of Aaron Rodgers over the last couple months. It has definitely shown, you know, over time, the farther we get away from the Jordy Nelson injury, the more Aaron Rodgers feels like he has to do it himself. So you see him sitting in the pocket far longer than he needs to. He's hopping around like he has to make a play. He doesn't look comfortable. He's even said this year that he's been scared in the pocket. But the Washington defense, I don't think, really scares you like some of these other teams. I don't see Green Bay really going on a run, but they will definitely make this game interesting.
Yeah, this game is really going to come down to, you know, really who does the best at running the ball And also, what quarterback stays on their feet most of the time? And I really feel like it's going to boil down to that. And I think that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to get sacked a few times, but it's nowhere near what he got sacked, especially the week 16. But, I think it's being closer to what we saw against the Vikings this week 17. I think he'll get pressured, but like you guys are saying, the Washington Redskins defense is hurt a little bit here and there, and I just don't imagine they're going to get the kind of pressure that you need to stop Aaron Rodgers, because trust me, given Aaron Rodgers any time at all, he's going to find a receiver. He doesn't care who it is. It can be the third tight end. It could be Kuntz. It could be anybody on this offense. He's going to find somebody. And I think that's a positive when it comes to the Green Bay Packers. What I do like for the Washington Redskins is kind of what Sean pointed out earlier. They're very good at home. I think they have a lot of pride at playing well at home, and they're going to give the Packers every bit of a fit as they can. To me, just, you know, looking at it in general, though, I think when it comes defensively, the Packers are healthier. I think the Packers are just as prepared as the Redskins, and I think they'll be coming to make sure that to give Cousins a hard time. So, I mean, I don't know. I just, right now, looking at it, I think that, you know, the Packers kind of have a little bit more of an advantage just because they've had the same system for so long. You know, Gruden's done well for the last 2 years, but I think that, you know, right now the Redskins aren't as comfortable as the Packers will be.
Yeah. I mean, so we're all picking the Packers. And it's hard for me. Like, I think the Redskins legit really have a shot here.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of those times where I go with experience, and it's really hard not to go with Aaron Rodgers in this kind of situation. So everybody picking the Packers too?
Yeah, I gotta go Pack.
No, give me Washington. I think awesome. Them at home. It ruins my preseason 2 rule pick, but just they're dangerous at home, and I think they're gonna win one game here.
Yeah, and I totally see it. I mean, I'm with Sean on that's the only reason I'm picking these Packers is because the experience at quarterback. Other than that, this is a wash.
I think, too, Clay Matthews is going to be a problem for that offensive line that at times has not blocked well. I mean, Red Rodgers has that problem, too, with Kerrigan coming over off the right side or off the left side. But man, Clay Matthews sometimes can be such an annoyance when he loves to do that whole thing where looks like he's going to go in coverage and then he just zooms through and freaking before you can even think about blocking him, he's already at your quarterback. And I can see that being an issue. They also like to send dicks a lot on a safety blitz and stuff like that. I can see the defense, you know, being some issues for that offensive line.
Sean? You picked the Packers, Sean, and you're with me on that. Now, let me ask you this. As a fan of a team in the NFC East that is not the Washington Redskins, who are you actually rooting for in this game? Watching?
I don't go with it. Same thing reason why, look, I love Arkansas, but I'm not an SEC guy. I don't care if Alabama wins or not.
Okay.
I'm not one of those people that, oh, my God, if my division wins, that just means that we look awesome. No, it doesn't. Still means that the Washington Redskins won, which I don't want them to win. So, you know, to me, I know. Look, you've got a bias too. You don't like Aaron Rodgers, so
exactly. You know, I'm Redskins. I hate him. I hate Aaron Rodgers more. So let's go, Pat. Let's go, Redskins. So, hail to the Redskins.
Okay. It's just, so, all right. Who do we? Who do we have in the next round, then? Are we saying the two bye week teams are winning in the NFC, then? Carolina and Arizona win their matchups?
I feel comfortable saying that.
Oh, the way it's set up, Carolina versus Seattle.
Oh, that's a crazy one, isn't it? Again?
It's going to be so good. I'm jumping ahead here. I really think if it pans out the way it looks like, I think Carolina and Seattle beat the holy hell out of each other, and Arizona is able to pick up the pieces. I think Arizona has no trouble whether it is Washington or Green Bay, and then they will be able to go in and pick off the banged up either Panthers or Seahawks. It's Jesus. I'm going to say Seattle probably wins against Carolina, and then Arizona beats Seattle, but it's that one's that's a tough one to call.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter to me, Seattle, Carolina. Arizona's the most complete team in the NFC. That's why I think Arizona's going to be the Super Bowl representative.
I think Arizona's going to be the Super Bowl representative, too. I think Carolina, man, they've been so good this year. I know the Seahawks, you don't want to mess with the playoffs, but I just can't see them going down without at least getting to that conference championship game. I'm going to say Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So on the other end, now we differed here a ton, so I'm going to say,
Well, if you took the Steelers, it's the Steelers and Broncos and Patriots against the winner of the other team.
I took the okay. Bengals, so.
So, Gary.
Yeah, go ahead,
took,
Gary.
Okay, so I got Broncos versus Patriots. That's the way it's going down. And I, it's cliche, it's
you
whatever.
Really, we got, that's Peyton Manning is going to be the starter.
That's fine. That's fine. Okay. But the Patriots, you know, let's see, who the Patriots are playing?
Patriots would be playing the Chiefs.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, okay. Oh, man, maybe not. No, not the way that. Oh, this is difficult because if you look over the way week 17.
No, we're talking about at that point the Patriots might have Edelman back.
But can they protect Tom Brady? Even when Tom Brady was winning these games, they were still having trouble protecting him at times. Watch the Dallas game. Watch the games they blew out teams, and Tom Brady was in trouble. I screw it. I'm just going to throw out this. I think Kansas City has a great chance of beating the New England Patriots, and I think I'm going to give them credit for that game. So let's put the Broncos and Chiefs against each other. I hate to say it, Randy, but I'm going to go with the Broncos. I got Broncos, and I got Cardinals.
Both times the Broncos will play the Chiefs, they have gotten manhandled.
You're going to see. I think they're going to change it, though. I have more confidence right now in the Broncos. We'll see.
All right. So you got a Broncos and Cardinals Super Bowl, Gary. What do you got, Randy?
Ugh. Broncos.
I know.
Just
you're
going to
say bluff for anybody in the AFC except for the Chiefs because it's your original Super Bowl pick. So, you know.
Well, even the Chiefs are bluff. I honestly think that the Super Bowl champion will be decided at the NFC Championship game. I think the three best teams right now in these playoffs are Carolina, Arizona, and Seattle.
All right, so, fair enough. But
whoever gets out of that works. But the way the playoffs work for me, it would be Cincinnati against New England. Obviously, it kind of comes down to who is healthy for New England. And maybe Andy Dalton is back at this point and all of that. I just think New England at home would be too much for Cincinnati. I don't see Cincinnati going from never able to win a playoff game to all of a sudden going on a run. So I think I'd have New England there. And listen, you're going to say I'm going to go blah and all that stuff. But listen, it's Kansas City, like you said, they have completely manhandled Denver twice this year. They completely let them come back the first time. But they are part of the reason Peyton Manning disappeared for, 2 months. I think Kansas City just matches up too well with Denver. And Peyton Manning is going to have flashbacks of all the four interceptions he threw in that first half. So I would have Kansas City over Denver. And then that leads to New England and Kansas City where, listen, Kansas City plays great defense. I think they would be able to get a lot of pressure to Tom Brady, who is banged up. I just think Kansas City can cause enough havoc for them to make it to the Super Bowl. That's why I picked them at the beginning of the year. The Chiefs in the second half were exactly what I thought they were during the preseason, just with Jamaal Charles. You know, they struggled that first half of the year, and I kind of gotten off the bandwagon a little bit. But this is a team that I picked to go to the Super Bowl. You know, that defensive team, a quarterback that doesn't make a lot of mistakes, and a good running game. Now, they don't have Jamaal Charles, but their running game is still pretty solid. So that's why I still think Kansas City will make it to the Super Bowl.
All right. I had Arizona on the other side. I've got the same matchups Randy had. I could totally see what you're saying. I think the Patriots, definitely they beat the Bengals. I think this would be too much for AJ McCarron. Then you've got, even if you got Andy Dalton, that's a long layoff to come off of, to all of a sudden be playing in that kind of game. Then you've got Houston against the Broncos. I think this is one of those times where the Broncos defense is so good. Brian Hoyer, I just think he still throws dumb interceptions. He just throws it up there, and that's all you need for the Broncos. You give them too many opportunities defensively to make plays. You don't need Peyton Manning to do a whole lot. And I think also this is one of those games where we've seen C.J. Anderson, even against good defenses, be able to rip one. And, you know, I think that's hard to stop for the Broncos. I think Houston would match up well, as defensively they could give Peyton Manning a lot of fits and problems. But I still think at the end of the day, again, I go with an experience in that position, and it's Broncos Patriots for me. And oh my God, this is so hard, because this is the same deal that happened before. Broncos, it's not in New England, so you know, you don't have that going against Peyton Manning, but oh my God, I hate this matchup because like New England like owns Peyton Manning in the playoffs. And I don't want to see the Patriots. I want to see Peyton Manning have it, but it's like I got to think with my head. Broncos defense getting a lot to Tom Brady. It's that same thing with you and the Chiefs. Man, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna go Broncos getting to the playoffs. So what, do I have the same thing as Gary then?
Yes, you do. You said I was crazy, and here you are with me.
Well,
you're both crazy.
Well, think of this. I don't know. The Patriots are going to probably wind up being there, and I'm going to hate myself. But
listen,
that would be. I'll say this. That would be an awesome matchup if you get the Patriots and Cardinals in the Super Bowl. But
you know, I don't know about that. I think that it would be a slaughter. I think this is the first time the Patriots fans would be sitting on the other side of the boat, thinking, "My
well, you
God,
you think it'll be a slaughter for the Broncos and Cardinals?" Don't forget, the Cardinals have a pretty damn good defense too.
Oh, I do. This is a better storyline, because the Super Bowl MVP, if the Broncos and Cardinals play each other, will be Dwight Freeney. And Dwight Freeney will be sacking Peyton Manning, his former teammate, several times. Think about that storyline.
So are we all saying Arizona wins the Super Bowl then?
Yep. Not me. Yep. I am.
Yeah, me too. I think it's Arizona. And just to go on the Super Bowl MVP talk,
God,
I will
you
say
know what happens every time
Larry
the three
Fitzgerald.
Of us pick something, right?
What's that?
It doesn't happen.
Wonderful things happen.
But okay. Who's your MVP? Who's your MVP? Real quick?
I would say Larry Fitzgerald if it came out of the matchup.
I think Carson Palmer winds up being the MVP
if
wins.
I mean, all these, I think, are actual really great considerations if the Arizona Cardinals win the Super Bowl for MVP. But the one thing that would be kind of cool is if Fitz won, he'd also be graduating college at the same time. What a year he would have, huh?
That'd be awesome. How does that? I mean, that's amazing right there. And I think watch out for Calais Campbell also possibly being MVP, making some nasty plays there on the defensive line. But I think one more thing we got to do before we get out of here is they did announce two more things. One more thing involving the NFL. They did announce their Hall of Fame finalists, which will be decided on that whatever that it's called now, NFL Honors deal, where they do all the awards and whatever, which I think is a cool thing. I like the fact that the NFL actually took the step that all sports should do now, I feel like. And go ahead and do some kind of award show for these things. Why do you just randomly decide that you're going to announce this, you know, thing whenever the hell you feel like it? Do it all in one deal, you know? But, okay, here's the finalists for the people who don't know and are just listening. You got Morten Andersen, a kicker. Obviously, this guy has been around forever. You could definitely say at some points he deserves it in there. You got Steven Atwater from Arkansas, safety for the Broncos, won a Super Bowl. Don Coryell, a coach, for the St. Louis Cardinals and the San Diego Chargers in the 80s when the Chargers were great in the 80s. Tony Dungy, Terrell Davis, you know those names. Alan Faneca is a guard for the Steelers, Jets, and Cardinals. Brett Favre, you know who that is. Kevin Green, if you're a wrestling fan, you know Kevin Green from WCW days and also played for many teams. During his career, Marvin Harrison, everybody knows who that is. Joe Jacoby, a tackle during the 80s and 90s for the Redskins. Edgerrin James, sort of know who that is during the Colts Super Bowl run. John Lynch, probably should know who that is from the Buccaneers, won a Super Bowl. Orlando Pace, one hell of an offensive tackle when he was around. And Kurt Warner. So obviously some names that we know as far as modern. Ken Stabler, I think that's a total robbery that Ken Stabler is still on this list. Dick Stanfield, Edward DeBartolo, who was an owner for the 49ers all the way till 2000. Who are your five?
Ken Stabler is actually on the list for Hall of Fame, right? That you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just surprised it's not already in. How is he not already in? Wow. This it's just depressing to look at these Hall of Fame picks that they made in the past.
Okay, one of these.
All right. So basically, because I'm looking at the rules as far as Hall of Fame goes, while you were discussing who was in, there can be no more than five of the modern era finalists, who was everyone you named until Ken Stabler, and then those last three that you named, 1, 0, 1, 2, or 3 of them can make it. So,
okay, so I'll give you mine. I'll take one from the old school, Ken Stabler. That's a must. It's depressing he's not already in. Brett Favre for me. That'd be the second one.
Are we all? Let's just all put it out. Everybody's Brett Favre, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
for sure. I've got Atwater. I can't believe he's not already been talked about yet. Faneca. That's 4. Tony Dungy would be 5 for me.
Well, you don't have to pick one more modern. Like you only have like 3 choices from the old.
Let's see, Edgerrin James or Morton Anderson. No, no. If I had another name to throw in there, I'd John Lynch.
For me, I think some of these guys are going to get in because they're on TV. You know, this always happens. Brett Favre, obviously. That's a no duh. A lot of these guys are on TV. That's the problem. John Lynch is an announcer now. I think Tony Dungy's probably going to get in. That's my number 2. Obviously, Ken Stabler is my old pick. I just think T.O. and Marvin Harrison, because they didn't win championships, will probably not be put in. Kurt Warner and Orlando Pace played together. Oh, shit. I'm going to say Tony Dungy, Morton Anderson, because he freaking deserves it. I know kickers don't get enough love, and he should. Kurt Warner, and I'll say Alan Faneca.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to you. I got Brett Favre. I got Tony Dungy. Give me John Lynch in there as well. Alan Faneca. I'm going to say Orlando Pace deserves to be in there as well. So those would be my 5.
I think everybody that's on this list honestly deserves to be considered. I don't think we're talking about anybody that's here that, you know, I say no.
The weakest guy I look on the list probably to me is Edgerrin James. He's probably one of the weakest guys I can see on this list. And you know, the rest of these guys, I think eventually will probably get there. I hope, like you said, Sean Anderson definitely deserves it. He wasn't my top list, but I think he does deserve it. I hope he does get a chance to get in.
All right, so one thing we got left. We know what's happening on Monday, the big national championship game, which I was the only one to pick Clemson. So you're wrong, both of you, and I'm joking.
Speaking of wrong, thanks a lot, Pac-12, on the last stupid day of college pick'em to make me lose to Paul.
Oh, it should be be known for you. You went all in on the Pac-12, and they... amazing what TCU did to Oregon, but you know, imagine if they'd kept their, you know, normal quarterback. But I'm just happy Arkansas won. That's all I care about. And yeah, so who do we have? The way Alabama just completely shut down Michigan State, I'm worried that's what's going to wind up. It's going to be hard to do it to Clemson, but I have a feeling that's going to happen again.
You know, Sean, I'm a little bit nervous about my pick. I picked Clemson, and I'm a little bit nervous right now. It's so hard not to think to change it because of the fact that Alabama's defensive line is kicking some butt. And
think Clemson plays defenses like that at all.
So. Yeah, and that's what worries me a little bit here, and I don't know. I may have to have a change of heart. I don't know yet, but I just look at that as a big factor here. I think if Clemson was able to use their quarterback more as a runner, they may have a better chance because kind of like what Tennessee worked against to Alabama, but I don't know. This is kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, as far as my prediction goes, I'm going the safe way and taking Alabama. I think, obviously, it's tough to go against Nick Saban in something like this. But it's something to be said for Clemson. Listen, yes, Alabama completely went out and drubbed Michigan State the entire game. But Clemson was in a battle with Oklahoma that first half and then came out in the second half and completely dominated. So you have to give credit to the coaching staff there for finding the flaws and completely dominating. Obviously, the numbers don't look the same as what Alabama did, but they completely figured it out. And listen, I mean, you have to go back and look at what Ohio State did to Alabama last year. You get that running quarterback, and you give them looks that they're not used to in the SEC for the most part. It does give Alabama some troubles. So to see Watson run around a little bit, maybe he causes enough trouble to keep Clemson in this game. Maybe the coaching staff comes up with some stuff in the second half. I think this game is going to be extremely close. The spread right now is 7. I think it's going to be less than that. I just can't go out on a limb and say Clemson's going to win it, but I think it's going to be a very exciting national championship game.
So who officially did? So is Paul actually, you know, without
Paul,
these games?
Paul is definitely going to win. Okay. He and I were tied with 2 bowls to go. Oregon was completely dominating TCU, and it looked like I was going to take the lead. Obviously, we know what happened there, where TCU went ridiculous and came all the way back and won in, what, triple overtime. So that gave him the lead, and then I had Arizona State beating West Virginia, and they lose 42-43. So he has a 2-point lead over me. I'm 1 over Sean, and Gary, you are 2 behind Sean. So we all finished right up there. I mean, it's tough to beat Paul when he finishes in the top 2% of ESPN.
Wow.
I mean, I finished in the top 7%. I'm very happy with my picks. It was just some of the ones at the end.
So what, I finished in 3rd then?
You are in 3rd right now. I'm guessing most of these people are going to take Alabama in the group. And even you, Sean, you finished in the top, almost top 12%. So, I mean, we all represented.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. There were some picks I was just like, damn it.
Yeah.
But, hey, for really, like, to be honest, and we do this, and, you know, Randy's our college guy, whatever, but we probably should cover it enough, but, you know, this is obviously a more heavier on NFL podcast, and who knows, maybe in the off season, once we get through the heavy part of the off season with the NFL, with the draft and all that, we can do a better job of covering college this year, but also we can't spend 3 hours every time we do a podcast on this. So, you know, it is what it is, but hey, I think for what we did this year, for how we covered it, for all the stuff that we did and didn't do, for us to represent like that at the end, I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap us up. We probably went a little bit longer than we should have, but we had a few extra things to do. But I think we had a good discussion on the coaches. We did our good preview on the wild card games, and what's left is now to watch them, and then we'll be back on Monday night to break those down and go ahead and discuss anything else that's been happening in the news since those games. Perhaps another coach gets fired because they lose one of those games. Who knows? It could happen. And especially, you know, Marvin Lewis, I'm sure, will be on the hot seat if they do not win. And then you've got also that we'll be talking about that College Bowl game, because it'll be right after that we'll be coming on to discuss, and then getting you ready. Of course, next Thursday we'll be talking about those divisional round games. So, all right, we need to hurry on. So I'm gonna have to, you know, kill the not doing plugs right now. But we will be back on Monday. Enjoy the wild card weekend. Enjoy the national title game, and we'll see you then. Bye, everybody.